Are you feeling trapped? Held against your will? Like you will never escape? Are you pacing around in a jail cell in your mind? Back and forth. Back and forth. Grab the cold steel bars. Do you realize you're in a prison of your own making? Maybe you feel trapped in a dead-end job, and you don't feel like you can leave it. You need the money, but you hate going to work every day. Maybe you're trapped in a loveless or toxic relationship, and it's scarier to leave than it is to stay. Or are you a prisoner to your desires? Alcohol, drugs, gambling, money, food, sex, anger, and rage? Or maybe your prison is thinking that you aren't good enough. You're not smart enough. You can't do this. You hear these negative thoughts over and over in your head. You'll never amount to anything. You're worthless. And the feelings of self-hate and self-loathing take over. But you look down, and you see you've been holding the key in your hand all along. Are you ready to unlock the shackles from your feet and release the cuffs from your hands? Are you ready to unlock your cell door and walk out of the prison of your own mind? Are you ready to be the person you were always meant to be? Allow me to introduce my friend, Rob, the artist.
And let me introduce you to my friend, Phil, the therapist.
Rob, have you ever felt like you're stuck? Like you're trapped? Like you're in a prison of your own mind? Like you can't get out?
And it feels like, in the moment, that there's no way out of the situation.
It's a horrible feeling. When I think of being imprisoned, I think of Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela was imprisoned for 27 years, and he fought for civil rights and the ending of apartheid, even from the cell. He was inspirational. He did such great work around apartheid and peace and equality, that he earned 250 honors, including the Nobel Peace Prize. Nelson Mandela was born the son of a tribal chief. His name was Roli Hlahla. Roli Hlahla, which meant troublemaker. Did you love that? Wouldn't that be awesome if your name was troublemaker?
And he was a troublemaker.
He was a troublemaker.
In a good way.
And even though he was in prison for 27 years, he realized true freedom came only when he let go of all the anger, of all the scars. Well, and in many ways, he was a product of a culture of violence, a culture of poverty, a culture of racism. Those prisons are harder to break out of. Nelson Mandela worked hard to break out of his mental prison as well. Nelson said, "As I walked out the door toward the gate that would lead to my freedom, I knew if I didn't leave my bitterness and hatred behind, I'd still be in prison." Those are strong words, man.
Yeah, bitterness. Bitterness.
It reminds me of our episode Resentment, right?
It does.
If you hang on to resentment, nothing good will come of that.
And someone is living rent-free in your brain. That's a prison right there.
It is indeed.
And some people can't escape that prison, or they never do, sadly. There's people you know that they just hold on to grudges for a lifetime. And that is a prison. They may not realize it.
Holding on to stuff. I am amazed. It's funny. I've seen a lot of things as a therapist over the years, but it never ceases to amaze me how people hold on to stuff. And they don't realize they have jailed themselves. They think they're holding one over somebody else, but they're really causing themselves suffering, pain.
There are people listening to this who think, good thing I'm not one of those people. But you might be surprised. There are, perhaps, if you dig deep, you can find things that maybe you haven't let go of, that you need to let go of.
This is why I like the 12 steps. You make a fearless moral inventory, and in doing so, when you dig deep, to use your phrase, Rob, you uncover where you're hurt. You uncover where you're angry. And you uncover when you've hurt others.
There's a luxury in that process of spending the time to actually investigate what you're holding on to.
When I think of one of the first prisoners that broke free, I think of Peter. There is a work of art that was commissioned by Raphael. It's an al fresco painting, The Liberation of St. Peter.
It's on the wall at the Vatican.
Painted in 1514. It's really this beautiful archway.
And there's a lot going on. There's basically three scenes. There's one in the middle.
It's like three paintings, really.
There's one in the middle, there's one on the left, there's one on the right. Then you have the doors on the bottom, double doors. On the top left, you see the half moon. And that moon is kind of giving an eerie glow, very moody.
Well, and it's the angel waking Peter, guiding him past the guards on the right. And the guards point to this lit up cell. It's like there was a blazed trail that he escaped.
The angel came to him in prison, unshackled him. Let's get the heck out of here. Come with me.
The chains fall off. You know what's crazy, Rob, is some people wouldn't go. Some people would stay there. But Peter didn't. Peter's like, I'm out of here. Let's go into the city. Chains fall off, doors open, and out he goes. But think of those that you know that would rather stay in the cell. I know it's a crazy concept.
Oh, no, it's very understandable. There are people who so often will stay in the cell. And you look at the angel here coming to save him, to set him free. Think of this. The people in your life, how many times have we had someone in our life? Maybe it's a stranger. It could be a stranger who has come into your life randomly. And in retrospect, you realize, wow, that person said the right thing. That person made me realize that I could get out of this prison. They helped me get out of this prison. They helped me with a problem. They helped me with an addiction. They helped me. We have to be so grateful for those angels who we come across, the angels in our circle of friends, the angels in our family.
At work, family.
Work, exactly. Yes. Because people are, in general, people are caring. And if you haven't met those people, I promise you, I guarantee they are out there. There is an angel who will come and set you free. They will eliminate your chains. They will give you that second chance. And so many people coming out of prison, what do they need? They need a second chance.
Second chance.
Where's the forgiveness? Let go. Everyone deserves a second chance. Don't judge somebody by their mistakes. Judge them how they react to their mistakes. Do you want to live in a world where people, everyone makes mistakes? Think of all the mistakes you have made. Now, what if for eternity you are now judged for all these mistakes? No, I don't judge people by their mistakes. I judge people how they respond to their mistakes.
And I think with addiction, that's very much a prison. And it's almost like a revolving door prison, where sometimes the angel lets the person out, but they go out and they relapse and they go back in.
Yep, welcome back.
That could be literally, actually, that can be literally, but it makes me realize we also need to be angels for others to give back. This is one of the great themes of addiction and recovery work, whether it's in AA or Advocates for Recovery or Life Ring, after you've escaped from the prison or even served your time and walked out, you go back and you help another. You help someone else that is struggling.
That is something, Phil, that is worth repeating. There are so many people who, for survival reasons, you look out for yourself first. But it's an excellent point that, I mean, it sounds so simple. Think of one person in your life who you could help right now.
Giving back. Giving back is crucial. In the 12 steps, that's the 12th step, is being of service to others.
Give something back.
I had a friend come stay with me. It was a couple years ago, who had struggled with addiction and mental health issues. And I took him in for about 3 months, let him stay with me. We had a fantastic time together. We laughed. He helped me out in the early part of my business. It was a positive experience. But as I said earlier, sometimes we need an angel. Send me an angel right now to help break our chains and pop open the door to the prison so we can walk out. But then once we're out, we need to be an angel for someone else. You need to, even if that's something simple, offering a word of hope, giving someone a ride, helping them find a job, talking to them when they're down. I want to mention another artist, not quite as well known as Raphael. This artist's name is Richard Phillips. Richard Phillips was wrongfully imprisoned for 45 years.
Wrongfully imprisoned.
For a murder he didn't commit. And he's now 73, and he painted. I want to try and see if I can buy one of these paintings. They are colorful. There are lots of images of musicians playing jazz. He has a really bright, colorful, lots of big shapes and big colors. There's a lot of life and warmth. Spent 45 years in prison, but he used art to break out of his mental prison. He said, "I didn't actually think I'd ever be free again. This art is what I did to stay sane." And he would paint his paintings and then ship them to a pen pal because he couldn't keep them all in his cell. And when he was released, he went and met his pen pal. She had saved all of the paintings.
Wow, that's incredible.
That is incredible. And he is awaiting a pretty significant lawsuit against the state of Michigan. So he's in Michigan. But he also put on an art show at a community art center. Basically, he said, "I got to sell my paintings to try and raise money so I can live." His art kept him sane throughout that time.
45 years in prison for something he didn't do. Good for him, man.
There's a concept I teach in therapy called radical acceptance. And radical acceptance is based on Buddhist teaching. If you fight reality, it brings suffering. But when you accept it is what it is, it offers you peace and understanding, clarity. It doesn't mean you have to like what's going on. I'm sure he had to accept his situation. I'm sure he also fought it over time. But to accept your situation, it's not giving up and it's not giving in. It's what can I do today? That bothers me a little bit. I think we glorify prison a lot in TV and film. You've got Prison Break. Escape from Alcatraz. Escape from Alcatraz was one of the first ones. Orange is the New Black, which is more of a dark comedy. One of my favorites, And what did you say? It's one of the highest rated on IMDb, Shawshank Redemption. Fear can hold you prisoner. Hope can set you free.
It's an incredible movie. So many people can relate to it just for the hope, for the not giving up, for the second chance.
Determination, persistence, friendship, allies, support.
For the long game.
It's the story of a banker, played by Tim Robbins. He's sentenced to life in Shawshank State Penitentiary for the murder of his wife and her lover, despite that he claimed he was innocent. And he was imprisoned for 2 decades. And over that time, he befriends fellow prisoner Red, played by Morgan Freeman. A skillful job playing this character and helping Andy, the character that Tim Robbins plays, set up a money laundering scheme with the prison warden. One of the things that really stuck with me about this movie and the story was how difficult it was when the prisoners got out. There was a story of one of the prisoners was staying in an apartment. There was a noose hanging in the apartment from the last inmate that had lived there. I don't know if you remember that. Have you seen Shawshank Redemption?
I have, but it has been quite a few years.
It's been a while. That always stuck with me that, like we're saying, sometimes we need help, sometimes we need to help others. For that transition, it is not easy. In my research about how to break free from prison, I came across Dr. Paul Wood, PhD, from New Zealand. He's got a TED Talk out. I highly recommend you go listen to it. He's got quite a story, and he talks a lot about choices and decisions impact freedom. At 18, his mother died. 3 days later, he chose to meet a drug dealer. They got in a fight, and Paul killed the guy. So he went to prison for 10 years for that. He talks about choosing to break out of his mental prison. A lot of times, he was saying, breaking out is harder than staying there. I'm safe in here. Why don't I just stay here? Like you said, you have to dig deep and you got to commit to this breakout. You have to have a strong reason why. His why was to learn. He started getting an undergraduate degree while in prison. But he talked about he had to do assignments in a windowless room. I might be in prison, but it doesn't mean life is over. Dr. Paul talks about figure out what the steps are, and the time is now. Change is not in the future. Change is here. Change is today.
On my wall, Phil, right above my door.
If not now, when?
Thank you. That was actually the first thing I put on my wall.
He was really big on talking about specifics. So if I say to you, hey, Rob, I'm going to lose some weight. Okay, what does that mean? 1 pound, 20 pounds? Say, I'm going to exercise every day, or I'm going to lose 5 pounds. Vague equals hard to start and easy to give up. He also talked a lot about mindfulness and being present in the moment. You have to let go of the outside world and focus on what can I do right now. He talks about if you focus on when am I going to get out, when am I going to get out, it can kind of drive you crazy. He talks about you have to develop grit, tenacity, the ability to overcome obstacles, never give up. Know that you might have setbacks or relapses can happen. He talked about his dad coming every weekend for 10 years. By the way, that would be me. I'd be there every weekend. If, as a dad, if something happened with my kids, that would be me. I would be there.
That has to be, for someone who's in prison for many years, to have someone who's consistent. That has to be such, I mean, wow. We take so many things for granted. We take so many people for granted. It's times like this where you're talking about how he was studying in a where he didn't have enough light. He's going to appreciate
having a desk.
He's going to appreciate a visit from his father more than he would if he weren't in prison.
It's so
true.
You've
got to appreciate those around you. and what you have. I've said it before, but it's worth mentioning again. The things that you take for granted, someone out there is praying for what you take for granted.
There's a video I've seen where the first frame is the person is driving a car. The next frame, the guy on the bike wishes he had a car. The next frame, the guy waiting for the bus wishes he had a bike. And then the next frame, the guy in the wheelchair wishes he could walk downstairs and get on the bus. So that's the perspective.
Take a look around in your life right now and just think, okay, what am I taking for granted? And stop.
And this reminds me, the last step that Dr. Paul talks about is living free. He says freedom is a journey. It takes ongoing commitment to maintain. Real growth isn't a one-time event. Real growth is an ongoing effort. We have to recognize the architecture of our choices, as insignificant as they may seem. So when I go, yeah, I don't feel like working out today, and I choose to skip, is that living free? If the alcoholic who's stayed sober says, it's just a beer, I can go out with my friends and have a beer, is that living free? Those slips, those skips, are sinking into old habits. He also talked about reframing your failures as an opportunity to figure out where the problems are, and those are opportunities to grow.
I always say, it's not a problem, it's an opportunity.
It's true. And I added one more idea to this equation, and that is, don't fall back into victim. Victim is a position where you think you're helpless, you think it's hopeless, and there may be some authentic pain, suffering going on there. So you might have been wronged. You can play victim by saying, this is not fair. The world has been cruel to me. It's somebody else's fault. You can blame. You can rationalize. You can justify. You can play victim like, I can't do it. I give up. I'm worthless. I'm hopeless. You have to get back up again. Don't get stuck in victim. I had a client tell me, his dad said to him, you can stop and visit Pity City, but you can't live there. I sometimes drive by Pity City. I think the best thing to do is to drive on by Pity City. Don't even stop there. But if you're going to stop, just grab a coffee and then get back in the car and go. But my point is, don't fall back into victim.
So many people are in a prison, let's say, of the mind. So the things that you think about the most, by default, those become the most important factors of your life. That could be a productive, wonderful tool, but of course, there's always yin and yang. We easily can stumble upon things that seem to have an agenda of their own, that spring up on your wall like spawning vines, like mold on a peeled orange. If you allow trash in your garden, if you plant seeds of trash in your sacred garden, what will you grow? If you allow poison, if you plant seeds of poison in your sacred garden, what will you grow? If you allow horrible assumptions in to your garden, if you plant seeds of horrible assumptions in your sacred garden, what will you grow? Why do things keep happening to me, you ask? We've all said that, right?
Yes, that's the victim talking.
Bad things do happen. But when they do, ask yourself this. Instead of asking yourself, here's the thing. Your brain will answer questions. Any question that you have, it will search for an answer. It will figure it out. So use that to your advantage. Instead of asking yourself, why do these things keep happening to me? Ask yourself, how did I become so good at being prepared and ready to deal with and confront this issue? How did I become so good at dealing with this? What experiences have I had to prepare me for this moment?
This reminds me of a great quote from an addiction counselor at a residential treatment center I used to work at, actually a residential treatment center that I helped open. And This counselor has been in the industry for a long time, and he had this really warm, easygoing mindset. Patients would come back and go, "I relapsed," and he would say, "Good." And they'd look at it, "What, good? What did you learn?" And it's that, "What did you learn from this?" that I think is so much more empowering than blame or rationalize, justify, argue, defend, deflect. What did I learn from this? What was my part? That's what I try to do now, Rob. Okay, this happened. What did I do here? How did I contribute to this? The other person did contribute, but what did I do? We have a lot more power over what we do than what other people do.
Sometimes breaking free from your situation is a little counterintuitive. I know someone who is a very rational person, which is a fantastic thing. Look, rational thinking, it keeps you safe. Financially, you've got to be rational, but there's times that you need to be irrational. It's easy to say coming from a creative person like myself, because the first thing you do when you're going to create something, or perhaps a creative person when you're going to try to figure out what you're going to do to something, the first thing to do as a creative person is you take this glass, this giant glass orb of rational thinking, and you get a hammer and you break that thing. Rational thinking can hold you back, because often you're thinking and feeling like what you envision in the sky, for instance. Like, so if you're going to do something and you envision it in the sky, or you look in the mirror and you see it, I mean, you have to be able to walk away from naysayers. There's so many people who say, "You can't do this. This is not what we do. This is not what you should feel. This is not who you should be. This is not appropriate. This is not acceptable."
Do you know who those people usually end up being? Your closest loved ones, family members, friends.
Oh, yeah. That's true. That is true.
They're your first critics, and often your worst critics are those closest
with
to you.
With wonderful intentions.
Right. Oh, that's going to be too expensive, or that's going to take too long, or gosh, how are you going to do that? You'll never be an artist. You'll never be a musician. You'll never be a doctor. That's what the loved ones around you will say sometimes.
Another thing I thought of is music. I look at being in prison as kind of caught in a loop. Sometimes it's a simple thing. It's just you're caught in a loop, like a mental loop.
Oh, yeah.
And if you can look at music as a tool, medicinal, you can look at music as a drug. Music is a drug, because what music are you playing and how does it affect your mood? So if someone's playing endless sad songs, that will affect them. That will affect them. Get out of that loop.
There was an artist, XXXTentacion, and his song was Suicide, Suicide. He was of that emo rap trap era. And I always worried about my teenage clients when that was their favorite song. I was like, let's find you another favorite song, shall
we? Yeah, no, I hate the word. I don't want to use the word. Anyway, hey, Phil.
Hey, Rob.
I wasn't sure that I was going to do this, but I have a poem that has not been published yet, but I can't help it, because...
Does it fit this theme?
It's a poem called Captivity.
Oh, I think you have to read that for us, brother.
Okay, I'll do it.
I have one more comment, though, on something you were saying a moment ago about the prison loop in our minds. And you talked about rational thinking and irrational thinking. The problem sometimes with rational thinking is we really get stuck in, you have to know everything about it. You have to be in total control. But what if I don't have all the answers? The rational thinking can't tolerate that. You don't know what you're doing. We can't afford to do this. It's going to take too long. It's not worth it. Does it work? Is it effective? the rational mind can lock you up in a prison of its own. You don't even consider trying. It's that voice in your head is too strong. It's talking you out of it, and you have to challenge that critic or that risk manager in your head and say, no, this is worth it, or I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm going to do it anyway. We'll figure it out. We don't have to have everything worked out 100%. If you wait for 100%, you'll never get it done.
The tools will come along the way.
Exactly. So I'm interested to hear this poem, Captivity.
Okay, here we go. I'm happy I'm doing this now. Okay.
I am too.
Captivity. There was a lion. Ate with a fork. Tranquilized for too long. One day, took that fork, put it upon the needle, shooed it away, stood up, walked outside, felt the sunlight, the warm breeze, calmly, peacefully, walked to the gate, picked the lock with the fork, gently set the lock on the ground. The gate creaked. Gloriously, the lion carrying the fork exited the compound. There were tall trees, rivers, bunnies, flowers. The colors were almost too much. The deep breathing, the clarity. Across the way, a shining light. Curiosity, a broken mirror. The lion carefully picked up a large serrated piece, stared for so long. The moon rose. Eventually, the sound of the stream helped the lion think, and in the morning, the lion missed the prison, the safety of the chains, the fullness of the gray life. Started to walk back. The gate was open. Stepped inside. Stood. Turned around towards the overwhelming colors. Then back again to the gray. Back again to the colors. There were no sounds of birds flying above. Where had everyone gone? Upon the wall, noticed for the first time, words. Took the fork and slowly tapped each word. You are free to leave anytime. The lion dropped the fork and looked out the gate towards the overwhelming colors. Heavy paws planted. Couldn't move. The moon rose, and the lion sat in that spot. Had trouble sleeping. An attack of thoughts. Anxiety. Society. Wake up. Hey, lion. The lion opened its eyes, looking for a voice. Couldn't find it. Stood up. Walked around a bit. In the darkness. How can someone? The voice spoke. Atop the wall, the raccoon sat, clearly now in the lion's vision. How can someone so powerful, so smart, so brave, leave an open door free as the wind, but return to captivity again. The lion, taken aback, gave the raccoon a scowling look, agitatedly paced back and forth. "You don't understand. You're a raccoon." They sat with that a moment until the raccoon hurled a lychee at the lion's shoulder, instantly creating the loudest lifetime roar from the deepest anger of the lion's conflicted soul. The sound waves sent the raccoon flying over the wall, and the sky turned electric blue. The lion sprang to the top of the wall and looked to the sky, roared again. The earth listened. The stars aligned, and the lion ran past the raccoon.
Just like the lion, when we break free from our own prison of our own mind, we have to choose to stay free, live free. Which reminds me of a quote from Nelson Mandela. "I've walked that long road to freedom. I've tried not to falter. I have made missteps along the way. But I have discovered the secret that after climbing a great hill, one only finds that there are many more hills to climb. I have taken a moment here to rest, to steal a view of the glorious vista that surrounds me, and to look back on the distance I have come. But I can only rest for a moment, for with freedom comes responsibility, and I dare not linger, for my long walk is not yet ended."
Thanks for listening to the Artist and the Therapist podcast. Subscribe. We have so much more on the way, so many wonderful topics. So subscribe so you don't miss out on any of that. It's been a great first season, and we appreciate you listening, current, modern day, or we appreciate you listening to this down the road. Contact us at info@taattpodcast.com.